1-800-660-667. I'm Gregory Berg, and I hope that you can join me for Monday's morning show here on WGTD. One of my scheduled guests is Tyler August, who is state representative for the 31st Assembly District in Walworth County, who also serves as the Assembly Majority Leader. He'll be making his first visit to the morning show, and we will talk primarily about the concerns that he and his fellow Republicans have about the proposed state budget of Governor Evers. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that focuses on the concerns in the Tri-County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Community Matters. This is Ron Purty. In this episode, we're going to be talking to Tom Ruzzi and Michael Thomas Detterman, the directors of Behind the Bucket, which is a documentary on the 501st Legion. So if you're a Star Wars fan, you've seen people dress up like stormtroopers and things like that. There's far more behind it than what you may think, and we're here to talk to them about that. Mike, Tom, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no problem. And I guess my first question is, like, Tom, you're in the 501st.
Correct, yes.
Mike, not so much.
No, it's not true. Technically, he's in. He's got an approvable costume, and that happened. Well, Mike, you should tell it, the story.
Yes.
I am a Imperial crew. I was very blessed by the Midwest Garrison. They had gathered up the money and got me an Imperial Crew outfit. So,
now, Imperial Crew, those are the guys that have the hats,
the jumpsuit
on and stuff, right?
Jumpsuit, the hats.
Oh, the people who work on the ships,
yeah.
Basically.
I am stumbling over my words today, so this is
gonna
be fun.
You're basically a mechanic.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of explains my life. I don't know, I'm fixing things.
Let me say this about that costume. It's a good entry point if you have a smaller budget and you know can't really afford to do armor. And also that jumpsuit, you can build off on that and do a couple different costumes. A gunner, which is just another helmet added to that already, and then you could put the chest piece on and the TIE fighter. So that's the base of the TIE fighter, and then you could just do other things like that. So it's a good starting point for getting in the club if someone's interested in where they might want to start but don't know much about how to, you know, put plastic together or some of these other more ornate or detailed costumes.
Yeah, it's like Sons of Anarchy, but not anywhere near as violent.
Yes.
Yeah. So now, a lot of people are probably thinking, why are you guys talking about Star Wars? There is a lot that goes into the 501st. Now, you guys show up at a lot of events, and from what I understand, you won't take money. You make the people pay, or not pay, but they're I guess them paying for your appearance is the money goes to a charity.
Yeah, that's correct. So if someone does want to pay for, you know, having us there, we only ask that they make a donation in the name of the garrison, you know, and that way, you know, the money goes to good use. But this is a charity-based organization. They do these things under the umbrella of Star Wars because they have this fandom, and they use their fandom to give back to the community in many ways all around the world.
Right. Oh, so this isn't just because I know it's a Midwest garrison.
Midwest Garrison is the local garrison that we covered. I'm from Illinois. You know, Mike is from Wisconsin, so it makes more sense to film locally, and this is what we did. And I'm a member as well, so we were very fortunate to get many events that the garrison is involved in. And through that, you can really see the dedication and the amount of work that goes into just putting these costumes on, but not only that, but using this fandom to give back to other people in their communities, and just by raising money directly and indirectly, just by their appearance alone. So,
right. Do you have like a rough estimate of how much the garrison has raised? just to give people an idea.
Well, Garrison is different, so you would that is for public display, and you could go to the Garrison's website, you know, Midwest Garrison or maybe your local Garrison, and see what your Garrison has done in your community, and you know, all those, the members and the amount of territory that they have. Because some Garrisons, we're fortunate enough to have a Garrison in every single state. Some states even have two Garrisons. The state is big enough, and or it just causes for it. And then, you know, we have an ability to, you know, be around the world and touch many different organizations around the United States. And like I was mentioning earlier, even around the world. So there's Garrisons in Italy and in Mexico and, you know, France and Dubai. So, you know, we kind of go through the process in the documentary too, and how a Garrison is created and what a Garrison represents. So that's one of our things we wanted to make sure we cover, is that this is a teachable documentary.
And this is open. I mean, you have, like, you're gonna have to forgive me. It's been a while since I've seen it, but you have to be sponsored to get in, correct?
Well, no. The only eligibility that you have to become a member is to have an approvable costume. Okay. So that means
so it's got to be something that can be could pass as screen used.
Right. It was screen. Yeah, screen accurate is the term what we use. But there's costumes that are from the animated series. So to transport that into real life. What we have to help guide us is this CLR, and this is the a guide that takes you into what things you need to do and for your specific costume to pass. You know, photos are taken. In more detail. It can be daunting, but this is another thing we kind of cover in the documentary, how you know, the Garrison wants you to be in, so they're there to help you. Do so. So even though some of these costumes and these, you know, tasks seem to be overwhelming, there's someone out there or something out there that will help you.
Yeah, and I've seen you guys all over the place, and it's fantastic. And how did the documentary come about? Mike, is that something that you had something to do with initially, or did the documentary just come to begin being made? I mean, Tom, have you ever made a film before?
I've never, this not in the role of you know, producer, director, but me and Mike have worked on projects in the past, and that's mm-hmm. how we met. Actually, on a project, I made props, and I always enjoyed the filmmaking process. I worked as an extra on a few things in Chicago. I just wanted to get into it, and through a mutual friend, we were on set for a movie called The Rocket, and from there, we became good friends, and we had some other opportunities that came up, which is some fun filmmaking things. And I always hand this story over to Mike because this is, he tells it the best. Just setting him up a little bit, we, as we became friends, we attended the same things like conventions, C2E2 being one of them. And this is where Mike takes over.
So, and like you, Ron, I had no idea what the Midwest Garrison was, or even what the 501st Legion was. So, and Tom was there, and he was all suited up, and it was an after party at the time. Actually, he was already de-suited. But I had talked to him, and I said, oh, so you're just a bunch of, you know, nerds, basically, because I'm a nerd as well, that dress up and go to conventions. And he's like, no, it's so much more than that. And he started going into the whole charity aspect, the nonprofits that they help, just these organizations that they help, and also going into that this is a worldwide organization that has over 15,000 members. And I was like, this is insane. This is really cool. And of course, you know, when you're a couple beers in talking to a buddy, you're like, oh, this makes sense to make a film about it. So why not just make a film? And next thing you know, Tom is like spitting out ideas for like the title of the film. And he's like, oh man, it'd be great to call it Behind the Bucket. And that's where it stuck. That's where it stuck right then and there. 2 weeks later, we were filming.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Is like, I know you. I never knew you to be a big Star Wars guy, Mike. I know as long as I've known you, it's always been G.I. Joe. And
I'm a huge G.I. Joe fan. Yes.
Yes, you are. That was kind of cool to see. And so, for each of you, which was the first Star Wars film that you saw? that got you, like, that instantly hooked you? And Mike, don't say Rise of Skywalker, because you and I both left that theater just very disappointed. It was the last film either of us saw in the theater before COVID lockdown, and we both walked out because I got tickets to a screening because of Blank Fest, and we walked out, and we're just like, we were like Hank and Boomhauer and Dale, and we're just like,
that happened.
That was a movie. So what was you guys' first Star Wars movie that kind of gave you the bug? Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, so, I mean, I remember in bits and pieces seeing Empire Strikes Back in a drive-in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just remember the AT-ATs and the snow scene. And I was born in 77. So to see Empire in 1980 is not inconceivable. Maybe I watched it. I don't know. Maybe it ran for so long. And I don't remember the situation or how old I was. But I couldn't have been much more older than, I don't know, you know.
Three, maybe?
Yeah, eight, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I just remember the movies coming on HBO, which my parents always had. I had the figures, which could probably thank my dad for getting me. I always enjoyed them, and I remember the Ewoks and how cool they were, and just the speeder bikes. And I used to use my speeder bikes to do that scene all the time. So I was definitely the demographic for it as far as the young age. Mm-hmm. So I appreciated the Ewoks. I know at the time, which I only found out later, people hated the Ewoks, that was the right demographic for me. And I've just always been a fan ever since. And even when the movies stopped playing, there was no more movies or no talks of movies, I was collecting, and I had a huge Star Wars collection, and I would buy things at flea markets and thrift stores, and I was always known as the kid that had a Star Wars collection. My friends would come over, and I had huge Star Wars toys and, and everything up on shelves and displays and stuff like that. So yeah, it's always been kind of one of those things for me. And now I don't collect as much, but I do collect helmets and, costumes. And
now you're onto the more expensive stuff.
Yeah, and I, you get to use these costumes to give back. So right. How amazing is that?
Yeah, and what about you, Mike?
I'd have to say Return of the Jedi as well. Just it was one of those where I was at the right age. I saw it in the theater with my grandparents, or my grandpa, actually, who fell asleep, and I thought that was the most hilarious thing ever. So that's what I took away from that, and the Ewoks, because I was at that right age, right. And the Ewok that's trying to drag his mother and says, Mama, and she's dead. It's like, oh, man, that is a tearjerker still to this day, because it was such a core memory for me. By seeing that movie, that I was like, wow, this is, yeah. But that's a whole other thing. So I'd have to say, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, the same thing for me. That was the first one my mom took me to see it in the theater. I was like maybe three or four at the time. And I was also the Ewoks, but as I got older, I started to, be like, I don't know. They were going to eat Han and Luke until, yeah. So, I mean, that's a little weird. And could any of us imagine if David Lynch had actually directed Return of the Jedi?
Oh, man. Maybe that would have been darker. Insane.
Yeah, a little bit darker. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Empire, that's why it was my favorite. It's my number one movie, is because, as elegantly said in Clerks, it ends on a down note, right? And it was just, we left learning that Vader was Luke's father. And
spoilers!
Yeah. Well, it's too late. So
yeah, for a movie that's almost, 50 years old.
Yeah. Ugh. But and that's kind of why I like Rogue One, because it ends on a down note, yeah, and
fair enough.
Yeah.
I have some Lars von Trier films I'd like to show you as well, then, if that's your bag. Things ending on a down note. Yeah, or Antichrist with Willem Dafoe. Yeah. Wisconsin's own Willem Dafoe. So when did you first find out about the Garrison and decide that this was something that you had to do?
Well, I found out about the Garrison when I was still a child, a little older. My dad would take me to the conventions. He was the one that introduced me to comic book shops and conventions. my parents were divorced, so I see my dad every other weekend, and he lived in the Niles area, which is not too far from Chicago. It's a northern suburbs, and when he'd pick us up, or even when I started driving over there, he'd always have something for us to do. You know, he'd always try to make it fun, take us to museums and different things like that. And he really hated going into the city, but he started exploring the city and started showing us things that he would find when he didn't have us on the weekends, or he was just out there by himself. And that's where we, like, my dad's the first one to take me to, like, Clark and Belmont, which, if you know that area, it was like kind of a trendy spot where a lot of punk rockers hung out and that kind of area. So, you know, I was an artist growing up as well. So we would hit, you know, galleries and once again, art museums and stuff. So anyways, but my dad, you know, he introduced me to Star Wars and everything fandom and nerdy. So I have him to thank for that.
And then, yeah, that's when you, and so that's when you discovered the Garrison and what they do. And
yeah,
how long has it been going on, I suppose, is about.
Well, our Garrison is one of the oldest. So when we started filming, they were hitting what, Mike? The,
20 years. Yeah.
So that was in 2000.
Oh, my gosh. We started in 2018. So that was 2019 that they had the
20 year.
The, yeah, it was. Yeah, because it was right before COVID. Yeah.
So, you know, the Garrison, it it locally here, it being one of the oldest garrisons to start, I believe the first one was in North Carolina, and that's an interesting story, and there's a documentary about that as well, how the Garrison, like, originally started. We jumped ahead a little bit here and just talked about what they're currently doing. You know, if time allowed, I would have loved to have got more into the history of how the Garrison got created and
what the director's cuts for.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. For sure.
So what was your, because I noticed the Garrison is, you don't see a lot of that, any rebel scum. Let's put it that way. It's mainly a lot of bad guys doing good, as it says.
Well, there's just as much Rebel Legion, which is another club that we share the conventions and other events with, for sure.
Right, but what I'm saying is in the Garrison, you pretty much have to be a naughty boy. Or
exactly.
Girl.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the qualification. You got to be part of the scum and villainy. You know.
Yeah.
That's some people feel.
I swear, if I have to wear one more black thing, I would never be. No. But so what brought you to, like, to the dark side? I guess what made you want to join up and not? Because I mean, was the rebel side of it, was that an active thing when you decided to join up? Or
oh, of course. Yeah. But I mean, my heart laid in the Vaders and the Stormtroopers. I mean, those are the cool guys, you know. Those are military industrial complex, you know, or whatever you want to call it. But you know, that's
thanks, Truman.
Yeah, they're flashy, you know. I mean, they're cool. They got the cool guns and the blasters and the ships and
everything's slick about them too.
Yeah, it's slick, but it's also very dirty too. You know, they get a lot of anti-heroes like Boba Fett, mm-hmm. you know, who's already dinged up and rusted, and you know, he's a bad guy. But he's you know, he's cool. You know,
you ever get anybody dressing up like IG-88?
Well, that's a hard one to get into. You'd have to be skinnier than Daniels to probably you know, this is a plain C-3PO. But there are a lot of great 3D prints. That's another thing that's really taken off and helped bring to life a lot of props and robots and all kinds of things to bring the story of Star Wars to life is these 3D printers and the things that they can make and the props that people can recreate. And it's when you get a lot of great photo ops with situations like that, you know, you could be sitting in the Millennium Falcon like we've had in our Garrison, or you could be, you know, standing right next to a life-size, you know, IG-88 or even lower, BB-8, you know.
No, yeah. Be sure not to kick BB-8 when you're walking by, please. Let's not do that. That would be bad. That would be mm-hmm. very bad. Mike, were you, when you became a member, I mean, was this something that just kind of like they bestowed upon you because of your connection with the film now, or were you actively looking to join up?
Yes, it was. Well, that's a very ambiguous answer there. I should just say yes. No, they surprised me. It was one of the shoot days at C2E2. And Tom and I know Rex was there, and I believe Ted was there as well. And they had bestowed honorary membership, you know, so I just had to garb up and get photos taken for approval, and then it was good. So I eventually told myself that I did want to become a member. It's just I have a really expensive hobby/career already.
No, it's a career. It's not a hobby.
I mean, yeah, that's true, because I do it full time. But you know, it's expensive. So I haven't been able to dive into armor yet. But I'm hoping the next year and a half to 2 years that I'm going to. So yes, I eventually want to troop. It's just, again, my current career is keeping me from doing that. So
what happened is I set up a Facebook post, and I asked a lot of the Garrison members to chip in to help get Mike a costume. And, you know, they had seen him at the conventions and at the events and how hard he was working and filming, especially Joliet. Background photos of him just sweating. And so, he captured this movie. I mean, for the most of it, it was just me and him, you know, and we were just guerrilla style in this film. So, it was a great experience. You know, we worked really well together, and, we had a lot of fun, but we also, captured a lot of great, moments. So that was really special for, I think, all of us.
Well, that's good. Now, for those just tuning in, I am speaking with Mike Detterman and Tom Rosie. They are behind the documentary Behind the Bucket, which is about the 501st Garrison. Star Wars and bad guys doing good. That's the best way to put it. So I want to ask you, Tom, what are some of, and this is, I can understand this might be a tough question to ask, but you guys go to children's hospitals and you go to places like that, that really kind of tug at the heartstrings. What were some of the places that really kind of left a lasting imprint?
Mike, you want to go ahead first? You got one in mind?
Well, many memories that we made with this.
Well, there's
film,
not there's not like... just one. I'm if there's multiple, that's fine. I just wanted to know. I mean, because I know that you make a lot of lasting memories, but were there some that just kind of stuck out a little bit more for some reason?
Yeah, I think some of the most tender moments came from some of our members breaking down in tears because showing their emotions, which is one of the emotional parts of this movie, just kind of connecting with people and seeing the unity was pretty amazing for sure. Because these are people that I troop with. So I haven't trooped in a while myself. It's been crazy ups and downs. Life gets a hold of you. You can't do as many things as you used to do or want to do. Yeah. But the guys are still amazing, and they're out there, and there's new generations of people coming in now, and they're making amazing costumes, and you get to see the next, generation now, and families are even bringing their own children into it, and then their children, doing a family, event.
Oh, wow.
And that's what me and my son did. We did a lot of troops together. He was a Jawa, and, he got to be behind the scenes of a lot of things, and got to see a lot of things, and, we walked on the field at the White Sox game, and we met a lot of different celebrities, and he just enjoys it. And then being in costume, he got a chance to interact with kids and all kinds of stuff. And as a character Jawa, you're mischievous, so it can be a really great family event that you guys can do together and put together these costumes, and that could be part of it. This family bonding, you guys coming together, building something together, and then displaying it for people to see. And so it checks a lot of boxes for a lot of people, and this is why I think it's so appealing to be on this side of it. Right. I can imagine what people think when they see the full costumes and they're at the conventions and they have their children with them. The children are excited, and so are the families. And so to to capture some of that. Is those are the moments where, you know, it's really amazing.
Sometimes I guess it's good to have the helmet on if you start crying, you know, people won't be able to see. You know, I mean, do you have many Vaders, or is there just the one Vader?
Well, that comes, you know, that
per garrison, or
no, there could be multiple people that have Vader. A lot of times, what will happen if there's an event, they will organize to not have two Vaders, you know, or one person, you know, you're Vader to here and I'm Vader there, whatever. That type.
Right.
The C2E2 is maybe a little different because it's just open. If you want to wear your Vader, you know. Some of these events, you know, are very specific on what kind of characters they want, and if that member is available and able, most of these things can get fulfilled. These events,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's cool. And now, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, where would they have to go to get a hold of you? Like, I guess, you, for lack of a better term, book you guys.
Yeah. So there's a website, if you're local, you know, and you want to reach out to the Garrison in the movie, that's the Midwest Garrison. So you would go to their Facebook page and to their website, and there's it's very easy instructions. There's a place where you can put in a request as a Garrison member. It is up to you, and then your responsibility if you take on that event. So you become the event coordinator, and you work within the parameters of the events, and you're the contact man. So let's say you're passionate about, let's say, animal cruelty, mm-hmm. and you want to help raise money to give back to animals. Well, you can reach out to your local shelters and be like, hey, how can I help you guys? Look, can we organize some kind of events where we can raise money for the animals? Or maybe they have a pre-existing event that you want to be now a part of, and say, what do you think about us coming in costume? Would that help bring a draw, and maybe we can take photos with the animals, those kinds of things. So as an event coordinator or as a member, you could do things that you're passionate about. You could, and or you could just sign up for other people's events. So as the event coordinator takes on an event and fulfills a request that comes through, they then post it and try to get other people to come to their event. And then they sign up for that, and then they have a set of instructions, like, is there a changing room, for example? These are things you probably don't ever think about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, is there a safe place for us to leave our bins? And is there food? Is there water? Right. Oh, is there a bathroom? All these kinds of things that you have to think about. And a lot of times, you know, people are changing in their cars or in a parking lot or in a back room somewhere to just, you know, be at some kind of event. So you have this weird these weird times where, you know, you're just making it work to maybe bring smiles to someone's face.
Right.
You know, this is completely voluntary, and this is what these people do. And it becomes addicting. I was doing it almost every weekend. You know, I signed up for an event, and there was, you know, times where nothing would come up or nothing was there, and I would feel like an emptiness, you know?
Right.
For sure, yeah. So it can be addicting, you know?
I can imagine.
Like, yeah, you're like a Disney princess or something, you know.
Well, technically, the female Princess Leia is a Disney princess now.
That's true.
Technically yeah. Speaking. Mm-hmm. Now, if she had been doing, if Carrie Fisher had been doing half the stuff she was doing back in the 80s while she was a Disney princess, I don't know how long that would have lasted, but that's neither here nor there. And all I can think about now is, like, let's say there's an event and you walk in the bathroom and there's a stormtrooper going to the bathroom and you're just like in full costume and they're just like standing at the ear.
Well, that would be an event in itself, because
you can't
pee in that costume. So I've been in a situation many times, at Thanksgiving Day parade, for example. I think I what's the psychology term where you kind of set yourself up for something every time it happens? Without fail, no matter how many times you go to the bathroom, when you're standing on a Chicago street for Thanksgiving Day parade and mm-hmm. freezing, just wearing nothing but basically long underwear and plastic, you always have to pee, and there's nowhere to pee, and you're stuck, you know?
Oh, man.
To walk this thing and get back and suit down and pee. I mean, there's there's a lot involved, you know, and being in these costumes and doing some of these events. There's another event, they call it the Death March. It's uh-huh. it's a parade, but it's like in July and it's so hot. It's just ridiculous. And there's some people that just they pour water on their costume or whatever. It's intense.
It's one of those situations where it might be a good thing to be a Jedi because yeah, you have yeah, the robes that are easy to, yeah, exactly.
We call them face characters, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That would, wow. Let's get back into the film a little bit because I don't want to lose Mike. I know he had a long day. Now, when you first started getting, you were in pre-production and everything, was anybody kind of hesitant to be a part of the film?
Do we have Mike here? Mike, do you want to answer that?
Do we have anybody? No, actually, everybody seemed pretty willing to be interviewed. That was the nice thing.
You had Ray Park. What was that? You had Ray Park, so that was kind of a, you know.
Oh, I thought you meant like the Garrison members. The Garrison members.
Oh, the
Garrison. Very...
I can imagine the Garrison members being pretty open about it. I'm talking about like more people outside the Garrison.
No, everybody has had a great experience with the Garrison members and just and whatever Garrison it was, no matter what state they've been in, celebrities and things like that always mention that they've had just a great experience with members. So,
right. And then,
you know, it wasn't hard to get them to talk. So
right. You're a celebrity. So when it comes to, you guys had mentioned that the Garrison had its anniversary just before COVID and, you had just started in about 2018, filming. What kind of challenges did you have to go through during COVID? Was it just a complete stop to production, or?
It, to a certain extent, it was. We actually were lucky that we got two of the most impactful interviews in the documentary just the week, actually the week of shutdown. Like, the March 7th was the day that we got the one with Steve Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And that one made into the film. But yeah, there was a good portion of time that COVID affected everybody, and it affected the way that we were able to construct the film. So we couldn't meet in person for a good 8 to 12 months, or nobody felt comfortable doing that. And, you know, so we were trying to do everything over Zoom. And that's not really the best, because Zoom wasn't how Zoom is now.
Right.
It wasn't able to support the bandwidth that a person would need to edit a film, or at least to watch playback. So there'd be skipping and hiccups and things like that, or crash, and then you wouldn't be able to log on. So yeah, we saw some slowdown because of that, but it was actually good because it took us time to actually look at the film, because we were supposed to release a version that June of 2020.
Oh wow.
And, yeah, I think that it was much better that we were able to take the time to look at it, take out some of the fluff, and I don't know, I think it just ended up being a better piece.
Yeah.
And Tom? Yeah,
no, I agree with that. I mean, there was some interviews I was trying to set up and line up that, you know, didn't make it into it. But then some other opportunities that came out of it, like Veronica, who did our animations, you know, who was a Garrison member as well in New Jersey. And she reached out to us, and I was eternally grateful because she did an amazing job. And we just, you know, we just wanted a basic animation just to help move the story along and, you know, to go along with the, you know, kind of the description of what the Garrison does and how it works and that kind of stuff. So she uses her animations in these specific parts that help kind of move the story along. So that was one of the things that came out of COVID that was fortunate, besides the fact that we were able to continue editing and take on a different version of what we had. But Steve Gaza, as Mike mentioned, was one of my favorite parts of the movie. Steve is a good friend of mine, and I actually begged him a few times to do this interview, and he didn't want to. Well, you know, he just respectfully declined, but I think me and Mike got him at an event when he was with his wife. And he promised he would do it, and we went to his house and got it, and got, I think, a pretty emotional response out of him, which is one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah, that's crazy that it's that many. Oh, all that stuff happened just before COVID. What were you actually able to work on besides editing? Like, how much did you have shot before lockdown?
We had quite a bit. Like as Mike was saying, we were ready to show a version of it, which was a completely different version. It was at a place that was pretty good, but I think we really honed it a lot more because we had the opportunity to.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't appreciate like the timing of it because, you know, we were sort of promoting, which is, you know, a lesson sort of in how to promote movies and not promote them too early, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But we were doing things with stickers and patches and getting the name out there. And, you know, I think what will happen is because of COVID and because of, just the process of editing and post-production, you know, we might have lost a little bit of steam there. But now that it's out, we're hoping that word of mouth really just spreads, it around that, people to check it out.
All right. Well, I don't think there's such a thing as promoting too early. I mean, look at Marvel. They announce movies before they even have a script.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and you guys were only pushed back because of COVID. So that's not that bad of a thing. A lot of films were pushed back because of COVID. You know, I wish Wonder Woman 84 had stayed pushed back because of COVID. But here we are, and we got to see all that mess.
Yeah.
Now, how excited are you for... Because I know, like, you know, both of you grow up with the original trilogy, and then you get the prequels, and then the sequel trilogy. How excited are you for upcoming... Like, I know, there's something coming up.
Mandalorian?
Skeleton Crew. No, Skeleton
yeah.
Crew.
Oh, well, yeah, that's first, yeah.
Yeah. Because I think, isn't the Mandalorian movie kind of pushed? It's a movie, right?
Yeah, it's with Grogu and,
Isn't it kind of pushed back because Pedro's off being Mr. Fantastic?
Maybe, but I heard from the beginning it was 2025, so.
Okay.
Or 26, maybe. 26, I think. So, yeah, we got quite a while to wait.
But Skeleton Crew got jumped up. The release date got moved up, I think.
Yeah. So the Skeleton Crew, I seen the trailer for that. It looks, I'll watch it. It looks to be, you know, more on the kids side of it. You know, mm-hmm. it's Star Wars has come out with a lot of like children's animations and stuff, and I have nephews and nieces that really are into it. You know, and I definitely think there's like I don't want to judge. Because maybe it's not even this, but I think there's a demographic of younger kids that are really into Star Wars, and this might maybe push towards them. I'm not entirely sure, but there's a lot of children in this series, and I'm interested to see where that's going to go, especially with I'm forgetting his name now.
Urkel?
No, the guy from AI.
Haley Joel Osment?
No.
Jude Law.
Jude Law, yeah, Jude Law in it.
The newest poster I've seen, it seemed he's like the main focus of the poster.
Yeah, he's a Jedi, I guess.
Oh, when is it supposed to take place?
That I don't know. I'm not sure of the timeline, but if he's a Jedi and he's walking around with powers openly, I would assume, you know, before Order 66 somewhere, maybe? I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah, okay.
Now, so when you see new stuff like this, how much of an urge do you get to be like, oh, I'm definitely gonna create that costume, or I'm gonna create? I mean, do you get like that kind of push to?
Yeah, I mean, even some of the worst, movies or series that come out, there's always a costume, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty freaking cool, mm-hmm. They're always making a new Stormtrooper. You gotta sell toys too, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some amazing costumes, and it's funny to see how quick some of these builders jump on these costumes and already have it like drawn out in CAD and ready to 3D print and versions of these costumes that you can be going on Etsy and probably finding full costumes or parts of the costume that you need to complete your costume, which is another like subculture, you know, just the prop making world, and cosplay in itself. I mean, you see a lot of these supplies and tools being sold now in major brands like Michaels, mm-hmm. and Hobby Lobby. EVA foam, for example, is a major cosplay material that you can do amazing things with. They call it foam smithing, and there's people that build incredible costumes that are made out of floor mat foam, and that's kind of how it started. With when you go to these, get these packs of like 20 interlocking puzzle pieces foam, that people found out, hey, I can make a pattern out of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Heat it up, glue it together, and make full-on costumes and paint it. And so there's like, you know, amazing things going on in the world of cosplay and prop making and building in Hollywood, and this subculture of meshing together in this kind of unique world that, well, to be honest with you, me and Mike want to explore a little more, and we started a project with that.
Can you talk a little bit about that, or just to kind of give people a teaser?
Yeah, it's called Finding My Tribe, and we want to just delve into more of the world of costuming and mm-hmm. And sort of make-believe, maybe. I don't know. We haven't really figured out our parameters, but we're starting with costuming, and we want to reach out to different people in different communities, not just the Star Wars world, which we enjoy, but even the furries, and get their story, the anime, and even the reenactors like Civil War and Medieval Times. You know, these are all people that are dressing up in period costumes too. You know, I mean, just people on TikTok and influencers, and you know, that, you know, bring to life these costumes and time periods back to life. It's amazing, and I want to get down to the kind of like subculture, but also the meaning why people want to do it. So like right. the psychological reasoning. So we've interviewed a few psychologists so far to talk about this subject and get their opinion on it. We want to approach this as a another teaching type of documentary about different subcultures that we're not trying to make fun of or nothing like mm-hmm. that, but
just show a positive light on.
Exactly, and let people choose. So let them have a voice. Let them talk about why they are passionate about what they wanted to do, and then it's up to you if this is your tribe, or if okay. that's your tribe. You know what I mean?
Okay, so it's choose your own adventure, but with your life, essentially.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
And where can people order? They can get it on Amazon, right? They can get the movie on DVD and digital and all that through Amazon.
Yeah, I'm a strong believer in physical media,
mm-hmm.
and I think as we see some of these digital things sort of dying off, like, you know, I know people used to buy a lot of digital comics instead of the physical comics, and there was kind of a dilemma with that, and even just recently, someone's movies. No, you no longer own your own movies, your digital copies. So there's been a lot of instances with that. So I think being Star Wars related, which is makes it collectible, you know,
right. get the DVD
is collectible, and just, you know, having a physical copy is, I think, a smart thing to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we those physical copies are available on Amazon, Walmart. Barnes & Noble, who am I missing?
Barnes & Noble, there's Target, there's also, you already mentioned Amazon,
yes.
and then mm-hmm. MVD, who's the distributor, their website as well.
Yes. Wow, so there you go, folks. You can go ahead and you can get your copy right now. Go order it. There's still a few days before Christmas, so head over there and pick up the movie, and let everybody know that you support the cause that the 501st, the 501st, I guess, yeah, I never know how to say it. There's three numbers, and they're Star Wars guys, and they do good stuff. That's all you need to know. I want to thank you for listening, and just on a side note, as this wraps up the 2024 year here on Community Matters, I want to thank you all for inviting me into your homes on this show and listening, and we'll see you next year. Have yourself a great holiday, and thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine.